You will swear by your true kingship to grant me what I wish. Then you shall have it.
By Excalibur, I swear it.
People of Earth, greetings, Earthlings. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Film Sack. This is, of course, Film Sack, where we take movies we find on Netflix, streaming, and other places around the internet, and we tear them apart and eat them and then regurgitate them and then spit them up, and then you guys get to dig through it and see if there's anything good. Welcome back to the show. I am Scott Johnson. Joining me tonight is Randy Jordan.
I have proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that it is possible to make love to a woman while wearing 50 pounds of steel.
I knew that about you already. Also joining us is Mr. Brian Ibbett.
I'm not a knight. I'm a jelly-filled donut.
Oh, man. And that other laugh you hear, of course, is Mr. Good. Brian Dunaway.
Hey, new game. Forget Marco Polo. Let's do Earther Merlin. Earther Merlin.
Where are you?
Where are you?
Good thing I captured that sound file. All right, well, if you can't tell from all of that talk, today's Film Sack episode is indeed about Excalibur. We'll let Scott Fletcher explain. Excalibur! Visionary director John Boorman serves up a lush interpretation of Thomas Malory's classic novel, La Morte d'Arthur. Boorman weaves a rich tapestry that includes humble squire Arthur pulling the sword Excalibur from the stone, the Round Table's righteous birth and ultimate decline, Guinevere and Lancelot's adultery, the changing balance of power between crafty magician Merlin and wicked sorceress Morgana, and the valiant quest for the Holy Grail. Yes, it pretty much sums it up. Turns out this is a long movie. Came out in 1981. It's almost two and a half hours or
it
more.
It is 2.5 hours long, yeah.
Long
movie. It seemed like four.
It did kind
of feels like it.
I honestly think they could have taken that quest for the Grail out of there and they'd have saved some considerable time. But
here's the thing that surprised me. In films that often feel long, if you're watching them to review, which is what we're doing, you find scenes where somebody's riding on a horse across a plain and Arnold Schwarzenegger's looking great and everything, but you could kind of fast forward through that if you're, you know, if that's the way you're watching it remote in hand.
Yeah.
This film really doesn't have any of that.
Nope.
It's shocking how much dialogue and sword play and stuff is going on in this film.
Absolutely.
Except for the 20-minute ride, once again with the flying horses, the 20-minute ride across the dragon fog.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even a real horse. It was like some weird guy on a fake thing talking back and forth. It was pretty bad.
Rocking his head back and forth.
But I agree with Randy. Yeah, the whole thing was like that. But that one scene, I was just like, is he ever going to get across? Because it looked like it was like, you know, 20 feet across and he was riding forever.
Oh, go ahead.
What needs to be said about the length of the film up front is this is not the movie I saw in high school. My
really?
Goodness.
Oh, that's correct, because there are two versions of this.
Yes. When we read La Morte d'Arthur, our English teacher showed us this film, and it is, I mean, it is cut down by 40%. Like, I didn't remember two-thirds of this movie.
Yeah, there are two versions floating around. The version you saw in school is also heavily edited for content, I know. And this one, the full theatrical release, is pretty hardcore. There's some pretty heavy-duty violence, some gore and blood, and there's also a fair dash of...
Boobies.
Once boobies.
Again, it's not. You know, we make it sound like it's a ton. If anyone's watching these movies, you'll agree that it isn't as much as we maybe make fun of. But it's once again, it's just sort of there, and for whatever
it's
reason,
it's funny that it shows up in every one. I mean, you would just think,
you'd almost think we're picking these movies.
Can we get Scott Fletcher to do a voice? Just boobies.
Of course we can.
Boobies of the week.
In fact, as soon as he hears this, done. That's what'll happen. He's our Ed McMahon. Yes.
I think there's an interesting little fact here, and that is that we're typically watching films that are 20 to 25 years old, and right. There is a sort of line of demarcation as you come forward in film history. In the early to mid-90s, the MPAA really strongly defined that if you have gratuitous nudity in a film, you're getting an R rating, and yes. A lot of distributors changed their patterns for putting out R-rated films. And I think that filmmakers responded to that very strongly, and found that they just, you know, we're not gonna risk getting an R rating in a smaller audience when we've essentially got a PG-13 film. This would have been a PG-13 film easily if it came out this year without the nudity. But you throw enough nudity in, and you can't keep that rating.
The only thing that Mike would made it an R was the rape scene. Basically, I mean, it wasn't a rape, true rape, but it was.
Yeah, it was.
It was inappropriate.
Oh, right. That one. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Heavy metal armor sex.
But it's also...
Randy said.
It's also a very interesting point, kind of piggybacking on what Randy said, is that, you know, it's a lot of the movies that that we're reviewing are science fiction fantasy that contain nudity. But you look at science fiction fantasy movies these days, there's none. There's no nudity in them. Yeah. So what was it about 25 years ago that thought, all right, well, we need, you know, the robots and the... dragons aren't going to be enough to bring the teenage boys to see the film.
Exactly.
Do we need to throw, you know, a boob shot every once in a while?
We got
to
throw a boob shot in there.
We're basically talking about our generation, too. So I don't know what it was about us as 13 or 14-year-old boys that were just pining for another boob.
Yeah.
I remember not being able... Oh, go ahead.
I think it was definitely done on purpose as just as well as Disney and all these other animation studios. They have to throw in at least... one bad word, and which ticks me off, that's throwing at least one bad word so they can get a PG rating. Otherwise, teenagers won't go see it. They're not going to go see a G-rated movie. They're just not going to. So to pull that demographic in, they always have to throw in bad language to get that PG rating.
You were going to say, Brian Ibbett?
Oh, just that I wasn't allowed to see this movie. I mean, I wanted to see Excalibur. Yeah, I think this came out, what was it, 82?
81.
81. Okay, so I was...
April of 81.
So I was 12. Yeah. Maybe getting
probably
close
a good
to
decision
13.
On your parents' part.
Yeah. I think so. Although, you know, I'd seen Clash of the Titans, and I'd seen, for Christ's sake, I saw Coming Home, which was a pretty violent... Wow.
Clash of the Titans was PG. What was Coming Home? What was it rated?
That had to be R.
Yeah, I mean, that had to be, yeah. There's no way that wasn't R.
Yeah. I only got to see that because my mom really wanted to see that and not the Ralph Bakshi Lord of the Rings. So
dang.
She took me to the movie theater with the intent of seeing the Ralph Bakshi Lord of the Rings. Or was it Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit? It was Lord of the Rings.
I don't remember.
I thought it was The Hobbit, but it might have been.
The animated one, right? The weird one.
Yes. Yeah. And pulled the old bait and switch as soon as we got to the theater and said, actually, we just missed that movie, so we're going to go see Coming Home. All right, let's go.
Wow. Yeah. Well, a little background on this film, directed by directed by John Borman. By the way, Merry Christmas, everyone. Today's Christmas.
Yes, it is. Christmas Day.
Sorry, if you're listening to this today, dude, what kind of life do you have? Or you're listening to a podcast? Right.
What'd you get for Christmas?
I got a something, insert name something. Here.
They're listening to this on their brand new iPod, which is a great use for their iPod.
That's right. Okay.
I got to watch a 2.5 hour long film about a, you know, metrosexual Merlin. It was kind of cool.
Yeah, oh my gosh, with the helmet. Totally. So the only other significant thing I found from John Borman was he was the director of Deliverance and The Exorcist III.
True.
So two very disturbing films, and this was apparently his baby. This is something he was really proud of. He still claims that he has all the original props that mattered, like the Excalibur sword is hanging on his wall. He made a big deal about this, has Merlin's little helmet thing, and he's a freak about it. And the remake that's coming in 2012 is being produced by John Borman. So
wait a minute. 9 episodes of Film Sack and 9 remakes is what you're saying?
Close to it.
Sequels?
Close to it. Species, we can just assume.
Yeah, what's going to happen?
I don't think the Bruce Campbell thing's happening, but I think almost everything, everything else...
it's funny that
I don't think Troll's getting the remake, but it should.
Yeah, it absolutely should. It's funny that you should mention John Borman and Deliverance. And since we're always talking about Netflix, if you go to Netflix in my area, they'll always say, oh, this is popular in your area or your neck of the woods in right. South Carolina.
Yeah.
And every time I go, Deliverance is always on there. And just find that.
It's almost like they're just playing it's you. Disturbing. Like it's a joke. Like the guys at Netflix are like, hey, look what I'm going to do in the South. Won't this be funny?
Look at these stupid South Carolinians.
One day you're going to be like walking the dog by the neighbor's house and you're going to just hear, you know, someone inside the house go, let's watch that one where Ned Beatty gets. Oh, never mind.
But I'm just curious.
It's a
do you guys ever look
about?
yeah. Do you guys ever look to see what is local interest? Not to get sidetracked too much, but local interest in your Netflix?
No, I haven't done any of that. I should.
Yeah. Didn't know you could do that.
Yeah. Check it out next time. We'll talk about it after.
It'll probably be Biodome.
yeah.
Netflix still thinks I'm in Austin, so it's it's really sad. Like the Austin is this perfect microcosm of popular movies. Like when you look on Netflix, like what's popular where you are, it is exactly what is popular overall.
Yeah. Because that's movie town, dude. Austin's great.
It's just like pop films, you know, like number one, The Hangover. Number two, I mean, it's just always like that.
Yeah. Well, good for them. Barbecue and movies. Okay.
But
so
back to the movie.
Back to the movie. We got a bunch of people in it that I'd never heard of, but there are people we have. Helen Mirren, a second movie with Helen Mirren in it from FilmSack. She was in 2012.
You've got a thing for Helen Mirren, don't you?
I don't know what it is. I'm kind of drawn to her. Actually, I had no idea when I picked this movie she was even in it, but she is in it. She plays Morgana, and she's as good as she always is. She drops the Russian accent she had in 2012 or 2010, whatever it was. What was the year we made Contact? 2010.
Yeah. 2010.
Yeah. 2010.
Nicholas Clay plays Lancelot. Sherry Glungblah plays Guinevere. None of these people are anyone anyone knows. But Gabriel Byrne in his film debut as Uther Pendragon, the father of Arthur, he's in it. Mm-hmm. And he yells a lot. We'll get more into that in a minute.
He's awesome.
He is great. I love Gabriel Byrne, but he was lost in this. This wasn't his.
Well, yeah.
Liam Neeson shows up again. Is that our third movie with Liam Neeson?
Yeah, Liam Neeson.
This is his debut, too.
Yeah.
Was it his debut? Because it was odd.
His hair was odd.
It's a strange role. Like, I feel sorry for that role because, you know, his only purpose is to make this horrible accusation and then get pwned.
Yeah. And then be strapped to a horse with a bunch of arrows sticking out of you and then parade you through
town.
What
do you expect when you go against somebody called Sir Lancelot? Come on.
Yeah, what do you think he's going to do?
Is that the best you could do for naming a character?
No doubt.
Let's see. He's pretty good with a lance.
Now, don't forget.
I'm Sir Lancelot.
As Leon DeGrance, we have Patrick Stewart. Not his first movie role, but an early one. And he's a young buck. Looks like he's hitting the early 40s or something. He's almost 70 or 80 now, isn't he? He's almost 80.
Yeah.
Wow.
He was really, too, except.
You really wish that Patrick Stewart had played every role in the film.
Oh, yeah.
Totally.
When he delivers lines, he's head and shoulders better. And the joke I almost made at the top of the show was, this is a film where every single male speaks like this at all times. And I will carefully and quietly come over there and make sweet, passionate love to you. And you're going, you know what? You don't sound under control. But Patrick Stewart has a way of delivering lines like that.
Yeah.
It actually makes sense somehow. He doesn't seem unhinged when he does it.
Yeah, he's a pro. Exactly. He's a pro.
He just seems confident.
Yeah, he's great as always. Interesting trivia about this film. The initial fight scene in the movie, which I thought was really kind of good, had to be filmed three times. It was filmed at night, and the first two times, all the film came out underexposed due to a fault in the exposure meter. At the time it was being filmed. This is the worst part. The cameraman responsible had a nervous breakdown over the issue and quit the movie.
I bet he did. He was, son of a...
That's it. We've done it twice. I'm out of here. He was gone. So they filmed it again, third time. Crazy. Director John Borman didn't like how the balance of the sound was off with the Dolby mixes that he had heard during the test screenings and changed the entire mix. This won't surprise you. To mono. The entire film exists without any stereo at all.
Did not realize that.
Yeah, which is too bad.
I just, you know, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
They did win an Oscar for this film. Alex Thompson won for cinematography, and I want to talk about that real fast. I thought that this movie's strength was its cinematography, and I thought the visuals stood up when they weren't talking. The visuals of the fights and the choreography and the kind of the places they chose to film and the lighting and everything looked as just about as good as anything you could pull out of your butt today. I was very impressed with that. Anyone disagree?
No, totally. I think he did a great job of framing everything, and it was just spot on.
It looked nice. I mean, it looked like, you know, there could have been Lord of the Rings if I had blinked and wasn't paying attention.
And a lot of set locations that were, you know, obviously a lot of these things were shot on location. And that was one of the things that kind of annoyed me about the movie, though, too, is sometimes it was some of the action was taking place in very uncomfortable areas for me. It's like, okay, well, y'all can film over in this area, but since it's a historical site, you can't film over in this area, so you got to make do. So you got to have a character standing over here who is looking at this character over here, and that kind of annoyed me, but I think that was more a restriction probably on the place where they were filming at than anything.
Probably. Patrick Stewart's 87th film, not counting any TV, so that's impressive.
That was his 87th film?
Not 87th. It was... if you look at his filmography now, it is the 87th film he ever made. That makes
interesting.
Sense. It was 87 films ago for him. Let's put it that way.
Wow.
Yeah. Way before X-Men.
Yeah.
All right, let's jump into the movie. I'm going to do things a little bit different this time. I'm going to actually play a clip to get us started, and then we'll mill around within these clips and talk about some of this. This first one is kind of what Randy talked about at the top of the show.
Uther.
Or no, it was Brian. Who said it? Randy, yeah. Brian?
Uther, me. It was you. Was so...
I'm gonna tell everyone it was someone else. Okay, here it is. Check it out.
Uther.
Merlin?
Uther.
Merlin!
I am the strongest! I am the one!
Okay, I kept that a little longer for two reasons. One, I really like the music. I thought that was great.
Yes.
But
yes,
two, great. I love every time anybody got hit in the head, it made that anvil sound.
Exactly what I thought. I was thinking, man, the sound effects dude was hitting heavy on that anvil, because that's exactly what it sounded like.
Yeah, his repertoire was limited to this one sound effect.
He was actually, let me say this correctly, I think he was hitting a flagpole with a hammer.
We should have to talk about this movie in that way, because that's how they all talked. There was an effect in this film that I think was common in a lot of 70s, early 80s stuff. And Disney did this a lot. Like, if you look at any of the old Herbie movies or like...
Cool Running?
Yeah, no. Not that. I'm talking way early. Like the ones with Tim Conway in them. Not Tim Conway.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Maybe it was Tim
Conway. The Nutty Professor and the... or not Nutty Professor. Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Yeah, all like those things. They all had a sound to them that was a lot like this. Like, the voice... Like, it's hard to explain, but kind of that monochromatic... We're recording it later on top of things. It syncs really well, but it just sounds like they're in a different room. It's hard to explain. But this movie is definitely from that era. You can tell.
Yeah.
And especially I guess that was acceptable then. You know, I mean, I guess it was all right.
I mean, the guy who played Arthur, he when he first came on stage, I mean, I don't know, did they have a different actor who was voicing it to make him sound younger, because he sounded. So whiny, and it was just, I mean, it was worse than Luke in Star Wars. I mean, it was was totally annoying.
I have a good clip of him talking in a bit. Yes, Brian.
Yeah, but I mean, that is the purpose of it is, you know, all right, act a lot younger so that in later scenes when you have to play someone older, then there's a difference, an audio difference to it.
I kind of wasn't buying it. He was like that creepy older cousin that was hanging around with the kids.
Yes, really exactly. Weird.
He was like Dave Grohl in the Foo Fighters. I thought he looked like.
That is funny because that was in my notes. That's exactly who I thought he looked like.
Really?
Oh, my gosh. That's funny. I knew he looked familiar, and that's it. And I also thought that Merlin looked like Pete Townsend. And who was the other guy you said?
Mick Fleetwood.
Yeah, Mick Fleetwood, dude.
Oh, I would love to have one of those Merlin hats. So, I mean, that thing was it was so formed for his head.
But didn't it feel like totally a departure from the, and Randy, you can speak to this, the the typical Merlin archetype is long, flowing beard, you know, more of a Lord of the Rings sort of wizard type.
Gandalf kind of
thing. Yeah, Gandalf kind of guy. What do you think about this interpretation of that?
Well, I mean, you got to make him stand out without making him too ridiculous, you know, because this particular story has him as a more of a common character rather than this mysterious, off in the shadows, and then he pops in and then he disappears sort of character. But rather, this Merlin walks down the street and people recognize him or don't, and he's not, you know, so he had to kind of look like everyone else, and so they decided that Merlin doesn't joust, so we're still going to give him a helm, but it's going to be this tiny little helm, and it's just barely going to have a little flap that comes down over his forehead, you know, and
this little skull cap kind of thing. It was weird,
right? And this sort of thing, and the main thing that struck me about this is that this film tried really, really hard to not get into any sort of magic. The only magic in the film that really stands out is the magic of the sword itself being, you know, for some reason being unmovable when it's in stone, except by one person and or his son. And, so Merlin had to be very normal, because our sort of modern vision of this character is that he could do anything. He could stop time. He could, like, the only real magic he actually does that I recall is when he makes the end of his staff glow brighter than everyone else's torch. Like, ooh, that's,
he had that cool butane end on it that was blowing flames out of it. And he also, I mean, the only time he really did any real magic, he healed a kid with a bunch of mumbo jumbo talk. Or not a kid, but a guy. Yeah,
did the making,
and then he disappeared at one point. But it was one of those. It was one of those shots where you just stopped the camera, had him move, and then started filming again. It wasn't like any special effects.
Right,
he just literally blinked.
Yep. My point is, this is not an Aragon wizard. This is not your, you know, this is not your father's wizard. You know, this is your ancient ancestor's wizard who is more in people's head than anything else. So I thought it was actually the right way to run him, especially 30 years ago. You're trying to make this movie. Yeah. I totally got it. I just felt like it was the wrong actor in the role, and I also didn't like the way he was directed. He just,
his disposition was off. It was like every wizard has to be a kindly Santa Clausy guy. I'm not saying that, but he just seemed to be so. I don't know.
Well, the problem,
they
to,
used
the
him
problem
as comic
to me,
relief.
Exactly. Yeah, that's totally what I was going to say. The problem with me was the fact they used him as comic relief, which totally blew everything out. And that's one of the things I feel about this movie. I feel like this movie is split in half. The first part, Arthur is really goofy and I want to say doofy. That's the word I want to call this first whole part of the movie is doofy. And, you know, because like I said, Merlin's all comedy relief and Arthur, you know, he is super goofy. And but once it gets to a certain point in the movie, all of a sudden it takes a total shift and it gets dark. And then it works. The whole rest of the movie works for me.
See, and I'm going to argue the other side. I preferred the goofy first half.
You preferred the goofy
half. I did. But I think if you gave me this movie today with modern sensibilities and everything else, I think I would probably feel like the latter half would be my favorite. But I think I liked the first half because I was at least amused by it. You know, it was kind of funny and not in a laugh out loud kind of way, but in kind of a,
I was nuts amused.
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous sort of way. But most important to this film is the Sword of Power, of course. We have a clip here where that is described by Mr. Skullcap himself.
Show the sword. Behold the Sword of Power. Excalibur. Forged when the world was young, and bird and beast and flower were one with man, and death was but a dream. Speak the words.
One land, one king!
All right, so he's a freak.
There's a lot of those points in the film where, you know, if they would have just delivered, or especially Merlin, I think I noticed it more with Merlin than anybody else, and I think I noticed it when he's in the room with Arthur, and Arthur's seeing Guinevere for the first time, and he delivers his lines, you know, much like Randy was describing, and it was right then that I was thinking, all right, Let me imagine him saying that line kind of like Ian McKellen would say it, which is, you know, much more subtly and, you know, she's going to betray you, Arthur, and the feud, you know, something like that. And it's a much more accessible, much more believable way of delivering the lines than
it's just not so obnoxious. You just want to punch that guy.
But the fact is, if you take and when you think about how you would like this to be, you're thinking really recent. Like, I'd love to take back, you know, Richard Harris before he died, and Ian McKellen today, and put them in some of these roles. You know what? I'll bet those same exact people 30 years ago were acting just like these guys right now.
Well, Patrick Stewart. Look, Patrick Stewart. You put him in a beard and a hat, and you got your Merlin. But that is the Patrick Stewart of today. The Patrick Stewart of then was still being directed to yell like a maniac.
Yeah.
You know, so I agree with you. I think it's just the time.
Act Irish.
I think it's the time, dude. All right, so without further ado, let's talk about why everyone is yelling. I've got a great clip here that really describes this well.
Yeah. I have a theory for why they're yelling, and I can't wait to see how the clip lines up with my theory.
All right, hang on. Here it is, and we'll check in. Here we go.
Where have you been? I have walked my way since the beginning of time. Sometimes I give, sometimes I take. It is mine to know which and where.
You must help me, Merlin.
Must I?
I am your king.
So, you need me again now that my truce is wrecked. Years to build and moments to ruin. And all for lust.
For Igraine.
You don't understand, you're not a man.
Okay. So I can't wait to hear your theory on why these guys can't stop yelling at each other.
Because they were all making their day job money on stage, every single one of them.
Yeah,
and I don't know if you've ever seen a more personal rendition of Hamlet. You'll see the difference between stage actors and say nightclub actors, or just sit around and read some Shakespeare with a buddy in the living room. And it will blow your mind how different it comes across. And I think of just like the night before, Patrick Stewart was on stage in London saying, "What a piece of work is man! How noble it!" Like, he's talking to Rosencrantz, like Rosencrantz is 100 yards away, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And because the audience is 100 yards away. It's a different thing. Yeah, I get it.
Right, and I just think that carries over into this film for every one of those actors, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we've seen this in some of the other films we've covered. I think this is the most obvious example of what you just described, and I think it's just an aesthetic that also, I think at the time, probably there weren't a lot of movies like this, so I think there was probably an expectation that this is how all things were, this is how those people were in this mythology and in this history, and that they would be stout men with voices on high, and they would, you know, yell at each other all the time and eat giant drumsticks full of meat and you know, that was the stereotype, that was the thing. So I don't know,
he's feeding these chickens.
like medieval times.
It's a big ass chicken. So moving on, why is everyone yelling? Oh, he finally gets the sword.
Rise, father, please. I was your son before I became your king. If I am king.
You are king. The more so because you're not my son, and I am not your father.
Not my father? Then Kay is not my brother? Who is my true father?
Only Merlin can tell you that.
And who is Merlin?
I am Merlin.
Okay. Where is my real voice? I don't know.
That was what I was talking about. His whole just acting like such a goof. I mean, I wasn't even sure if it was dubbed over, because I couldn't even tell the way he was delivering the lines. I couldn't even tell if his lips were moving with what he was saying. It was odd to me.
If you want
to
see a very entertaining movie that uses that kind of voice work, watch Hot Lead and Cold Feet, an old Disney movie that had what's his name? It was Mr. Roper? Not Mr. Roper. Yeah, Mr. Roper.
Yeah. Norman Fell.
No. Oh my gosh, you actually know who Mr. Roper is.
The real Mr. Roper. Thank you.
No, the other one, the guy that took his place.
Don Furley.
Yes, Mr. Furley. Don what? Not Rickles.
Don Knotts.
Don Knotts. Okay, thank you. Gosh, dang it.
Barney.
I'm going to call you're like Cha-Cha, dude. Hello, I'm just going to call you up. Anyway, so if you Cha-Cha's that phone service that like you can text it and ask it questions.
Yeah.
Anyway, see, that movie is using that all over the place. It's crazy how everybody sounds like that guy. Like what you just heard could have been pulled from that movie.
See if we can find Hot Lead and Cold Feet on Netflix, because that movie stars Jim Dale, who is just my favorite voice
actor.
He's
wonderful in it. He's great in it. He's the British equivalent of awesome. So yeah. I recommend it. I don't think it's actually streaming, but it's worth checking out if you can't get it any other way. All right, more yelling. And this is our first lines from Patrick Stewart, so I thought it was significant.
You are King Arthur.
Merlin! We haven't forgotten you! What trickery is this?
They're both swords. I'm not certain.
He's trying to foist a fatherless boy upon us! Do you want a bastard as a king?
Hurry, undergrounds! Join us against the boy!
I saw what I saw! The boy drew the sword. If a boy has been chosen, a boy shall be king!
No! I challenge that!
The sword has been drawn!
Are you with us or against us?
Against you!
Merlin!
How can a boy find out?
Okay, how is it that it wasn't until you said that, Randy, that I didn't notice that everybody in the movie was screaming. I noticed Merlin was screaming, but holy cow, I didn't realize
everybody in the movie.
And they're inches away. When that guy yelled, are we really going to have a boy for the king or whatever? He's literally like 4 inches from Picard.
He is. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And it's weird.
And it's even in some like sentimental, touching, personal scenes where two people are alone in a room. The male actors are hollering. Bellowing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I must have that woman. Like, dude, she can hear you. She's right there.
Yes. Now, Randy, you read the what was it, the Morte King Arthur?
The Arthur. Yes.
Yeah. Did they have the deal in there where, all right, King Arthur
was everything
pulls
in all
the sword.
Caps in the book?
So King Arthur pulls the sword from the stone, then puts it back, somebody else pulls it. And then can't do it, and then King Arthur pulls it again, like just to prove that he didn't loosen it or something.
Yeah, did that happen in the book?
Yeah, that's I remember that, and I'm not sure if I remember that from the Mallory rendition or others, because like my favorite, for instance, is the Stephen Lougheed trilogy, Taliesin, Merlin, Arthur. That's probably the best Arthurian legend in my opinion, but. That's a pretty common thing that he had to prove that he could really pull it from the stone by put it back in the stone. All right, who else wants to give it a try? Give it a try.
Really?
Pull it
up. Okay.
See, I'm your king.
Look, Brian.
Told you.
Brian Dunaway's assertion that book may have been written in all caps is the single greatest thing I've heard in months. That is so funny. All right, very
that
nice.
Fuck is Drew's control for cool.
Wouldn't you like to go back in time, go back to 1981, sit down with Jean-Luc Picard and explain to him, or to Patrick Stewart, and explain to him that within like 8 measly years, you will be the captain of the Enterprise and be in the running for the greatest captain of any Enterprise and be headed for a bunch of movies and stardom in other ways that you can't believe. What do you think Patrick Stewart of 1981 would have said to you if you said something like that? That'd be weird.
It never happened.
It won't happen. Someone bring me the sandwich. All right, moving on. This is...
Who the hell are you and what are you doing in my dressing room?
Out! The dragon is everywhere, according to Merlin.
What are you afraid of?
I don't know.
Shall I tell you what's out there?
Yes, please.
The dragon. A beast of such power that if you were to see it whole and all complete in a single glance, it would burn you to cinders.
Where is it?
It is everywhere. It is everything. Its scales glisten in the bark of trees. Its roar is heard in the wind, and its forked tongue strikes like...
Wow, like lightning.
Yes, that's it.
I finally figured out what's annoying me about it.
Okay, what?
He reminds me so much, the way he's doing his voice, of Mr. Bean. That's what it reminds me of.
Like he's Rowan Atkinson from like...
Exactly.
What's that show, Black Adder? He's kind of doing the Black Adder thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, that's funny.
Whoa!
Yeah, he's like Randy. I think Randy said it best. He is miscast. That's the wrong guy for that. I can't take him serious. I mean, he made for better clips, you know? Yeah. Like my job was easier in the first half of this movie because capturing clips from the first half is way easier than the last half. I hardly got anything because the last half is kind of serious and good. Like, you know, they're pretty earnest about what's going on. But in the first half, it's like, oh, I don't know, please tell me. Oh, okay, with the freaking thing and the lightning, and it's just ridiculous. It doesn't, you know,
right,
all comes off
right.
stupid.
The last half of the film, I wanted to start intercutting this film with scenes from the medieval times, scene from the cable guy.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Like, because they get all serious and everything, and I'm just waiting. I'm like, can we just break this up? Like, have Janine Garofalo come in here and say, there were no utensils in medieval times, hence there are no utensils at medieval times. Would you like a refill on that Pepsi?
I like that movie. I know people hate it, but I
Me
like
too.
It. All yeah. right. Here's one of my favorite lines in the movie because it is the most obvious stupid thing I've ever heard.
Merlin, your wisdom has forged this ring. Hereafter, so that we remember our bonds, we shall always come together in a circle to hear and tell of deeds good and brave. I will build a round table where this fellowship shall meet.
I love that part. When you had to
think about it.
No,
make it a hot tub.
We'll be nice.
Remember you.
Around the round table.
What are you thinking? Like, he could have said anything at that moment. I will build a brothel or anything. No.
I will build an IHOP here. An international house of pancakes.
I will build a set of cubicles, and we'll all sit in our individual cubicles and plan what we're going to do.
And we'll tell our stories.
I mean, I guess because they knew that everybody knew about Arthur and the Round Table, the thing that cracked me up was that the way I suppose the director must have said, okay, he has never thought of this idea of the round table, so you need to pause for a second. And it was just so ineffectual, like he was just making up crap as he went along. It didn't seem like he was thinking of it. It was more like he was making up crap.
It got my first real laugh of the movie. I laughed out loud.
I did too. I was just
too. I did too.
He looked
Do
up
we really
the sky
need to
went,
know the inception of the round table? When it came to... I think if we just saw the round table, them all sitting at it, we wouldn't say, well, how did he come up with that?
Well, it's not like a big reveal. It's like, you know, in Superman, it's a huge reveal that, ooh, this is his Fortress of Solitude. Or in Spider-Man, it's, oh, this is when the spider bit him. So they have to be very explicit about it. And this one, the legend about the table is true. But it's like you don't have to go through this thing where you basically say it. You know, it's like,
you didn't hear Superman say, I will call this my Fortress of...
I know.
Solitude.
Solitude. I'm here by myself.
And we'll put curtains over here. Yeah. Of what I called it, the Batcave.
I think one thing there is that this is a really stodgy British film, and the people making it can't help themselves but think that it is going to be shown to school children. And it is, you know, they really, these filmmakers have this, give you this sense the entire movie that they are in some way recording history. Even though it's a bunch of nonsense and it didn't actually happen.
It never happened.
They treat it like it's a historical record. And that's, you know, that you just highlighted one of the big differences between how you treat something like a historical record and how you treat something that's from a comic book.
Yeah, I mean, if I was filming this today, I would say, this is great that we're all together. We must tell our tales of zubba zubba blah. And then the next scene, you fade into this, you know, because that's what they basically did. You fade into this place with this huge round table full of knights. You slowly go around looking at these awesome dudes who are all freaking tough and under armor. That's all you got to do. You don't have to explicitly say it. It's not nobody in movies goes, and this next scene, we'll see a monster come out of a closet. Transition.
Unless you're watching Super Friends, in which case.
That's true. But that's the point. This is like super friendian, you know, filmmaking.
Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't go through the whole thing. But why is the table going to be round? So that no man can be at the head of it.
Indeed. I love that voice.
Build a large room. It will be called the Oval Office.
And it will be not round, but oblong.
Good times. All right. Here's the laughing. This is the second part of the movie that made me laugh out loud. And it's just so dumb. Check it out.
You seek what Arthur wants? That thing they call the Grail?
I do.
Then follow me.
That's so
All
right. That was, of course, that was the ill-begotten child of Arthas and his sister.
Brother and sister.
Yeah. Arthas.
What did I say? Arthas? Oh, whoops. Arthur. Well, I mean, it's all connected somehow. These guys all rip each other off. But, nice faux pas there.
We haven't talked about that, but that scene was very disturbing.
Oh, it was more than disturbing. It was basically Helen Mirren basically raped this unknown Arthur guy as his sister, conceived a child, gave birth to it. This is the kid now, and she's raising him up to take over the kingdom, and she'll be sort of, you know, she'll be kind of the wizard person behind all of that, because she's taken on all the black magic of Merlin. He taught her how to do stuff, I guess, with whatever all that means. And so he's prancing around the forest. I thought it was a woman at first, laughing and stuff.
But it wasn't. I totally thought it was a woman. I'm like, this has got to be – well, I figured it was the lady. I figured it was her. I didn't figure it was her son.
I called this character Tattoo for a while, and I think
that's funny.
That would work. Now, in the story, it's been ages since I read the lore of, you know, the Arthurian lore that's behind all of this. It never jumped out of the page and said, "Oh my gosh, this is an incestuous, you know, result. This baby."
Yeah, yeah.
But in the movie, somehow it really hit me. Hit me and said, it slapped me in the face and said, "By the way, they're brother and sister, and that kid's gonna have a third eyeball on his back. Nobody can see it.
He's gonna laugh really weird. He's gonna be messed up in the head."
Yeah, and somebody, one of you, it was either you or Ibbot, before we started the show, you were saying that this movie was a great argument against
why brothers and sisters should not procreate.
Exactly, because that kid was messed up.
Something else
up.
That keeps coming up on film, Zach, incest. I don't understand why.
These common themes, I don't get it. As long as we don't have any more movies with stuff written in poo on the wall, I'm happy.
Merry
Christmas.
Merry Christmas to all. We got another clip here. This is, I wrote A Dream to Some, but I don't remember the rest, so here it is.
"You brought me back. Your love brought me back. Back to where you are now. In the land of dreams. Are you just a dream, Merlin? A dream to some.
A nightmare to others!"
I love that. It throws up his...
I love how he just loses his crap. Just loses his crap in the middle of the conversation.
Holy. He throws open his cape and everything. You know, it's like,
yeah.
See, that's another great... startling. I kind of jumped.
It's another great line that you can imagine him delivering, you know, in the same tone, in the same voice as the previous line, and it would be much more powerful.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And why they had him do it. I mean, that's got to be direction. The guy's not demanding to do it his own way on set, I have to think. You know, it's got to be the director. So I blame Dr. something, something, something. What's his name? Anyway.
The thing is, if I'm going to really blame the filmmakers for one thing, it's going to be having no idea what to do with the women, having no idea what to do with the female characters or how to direct the female actors. There wasn't a single moment of with a female speaking in this film that I thought was good. And that's their fault. It's not like they had bad content or poor actors to work with. They just couldn't figure out what they were going to do.
Yeah, I agree with that. Just to run down some of the things I think were my favorite things in this movie, and I'd like to go around the table with this. The round table. Our own little round table.
Like to go around the
table.
Round table.
Great cinematography. I thought the music was awesome. I really did like the music. I thought that Gabriel Byrne was cool as Uther Pendragon. I also thought he was my favorite death. If I was going to pick my best death in this movie, it was when Gabriel Byrne fell off his horse because a bird got in his face. And it fell on like six swords. That was great.
That was awesome.
I thought that was really great.
Which they didn't take out of his body as they hauled it off either. Like,
they
walked it off with
there.
Six swords sticking out of it.
Yeah, it was weird. The future has taken root in the present was my favorite line in the movie. Because I, to this moment, don't know what the hell that means. The future has taken root in the present. What does that mean?
Yes.
Arthur is a weenie. I already knew that. I thought the battles and the stunt work were really good, like top-notch, especially for its day. I think it held up well today. And there were some dangerous stunts, and I would notice, like, actual actors in the stunts and in precarious sort of horse related stuff that could have ended in someone's death. Like it was, yeah, it was pretty hardcore in some scenes, especially when they did the siege of that castle before the kid got knighted. Thought that was really, really well done. And I felt like this movie made me want to go watch Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Wow.
Not to laugh, but it reminded me of what I think, as many things I thought were good in the movie, it reminded me of the Arthur movie that I would have been more entertained by.
Yeah.
I'd get more out of the Monty Python movie. And I also felt like there was a lot, I don't know when that movie came out, but it felt like there was a lot of borrowing of sets and the feel and look of things with those two movies. And maybe it's just if you film somewhere in the European what do you call that? Not the outback, it's Australia. The
countryside.
The countryside, I guess, or whatever. That whole place just looks that way, and there's mud to be dug into with peasants and things, and it all looks the same, I guess. Yeah. But it reminded me of that, made me want to go see it. And there's a few things that I really liked. Let's go around the round table. Start with Brian Dunaway. Brian, what'd you come away with in the positive column or the negative column on the movie?
The positive column, like I said, half of the movie, I thought once it found this ground, which was it being dark, I think it made for a good movie. I did not like we'd said before, I did not like how they portrayed Merlin is comic relief. I think that character is very fascinating. There's a lot of treatments out there on who Merlin was, and I think they played his part pretty well, like I said, but I just think the lines they gave him and the sarcasm that was constantly in there, it kind of felt Doctor Who-ish to me on that part of it.
That guy even looked like Doctor Who a little bit.
Yeah, it was kind of like Doctor Who. That's what kind of Merlin and I would expect to see on Doctor Who, if it was such a thing.
All right.
But, you know, talk is for lovers. And
all right.
And I like that part about it, but my favorite part of the movie has got to be Sir Lancelot. I would have preferred to have seen more about that part of the story. He fascinated me much more than the rest of it, even if he was buck naked.
Yeah, do you like him when he got the spear through his groin while he was out naked?
That
in
was
the woods?
Actually really effective. I mean, that really looked like it was sticking through his thigh.
I know, but what's bad about that whole scene, though, and this is my problem with some of those movies, is that I call me sexist, but I don't want to see a dude's noodle while he's wrestling with his own suit of armor. So he's out there wrestling his armor, and I'm thinking, please don't bend over, please don't move that way, please don't whatever. And sure enough, big old brrr, gets a nice little shot of his unit. I'm like, dude, come on, put that away. Not dark enough. Strats, no. Pull it up, tape it down.
Dark enough.
Do something.
Too much daylight.
All right, cool enough. Go ahead.
One last thing that I want to mention. What's the purpose of a moat if it's only going to be 2 feet deep?
I don't get that at all, man. I guess you won't
They're
be able to drive
a
sports
moat
car
like it was
over.
A joke.
Yeah, but it's a good place for a knighting, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Kneel down, just about drown kneeling down to
barely. Here,
I'm handing you the ancient sword. I trust you to not like run away with it. So you know, I'm going to mire you in some mud to make sure.
Yeah, that was a risky move. Okay. I thought paid off for him, but risky. Speaking of risky, Brian Ibbett, what's your your favorite moment?
Am I risky?
No, you're not risky.
What I really liked, the Lady in the Lake. I thought the whole Lady in the Lake, the use of that character and the special effects that they used for that was really well done. Especially, you know, you've seen it a million times, but just the power of that shot of the hand rising up out of the lake with the sword in it. I love that. I mean, that
beautiful sword.
You've been talking about it. Oh, it was.
Sword. Yeah, the sword was cool. One of the effects I liked is where there was always green light being cast upon it from somewhere off the camera.
Yes, and then we'd even joke, throw it out, turn on the green lights, and you'd see like three green lights reflected in it.
Yeah.
There was a quote in there that I'm almost positive is not going to be the Scott Fletcher quote, so I don't mind spoiling it.
Go for it.
But it's something that Lancelot says really quickly after they introduce him, and he says, "All I knew was how to butcher men. Now I shall learn how to love them."
Yeah, yeah, I remember that.
And yeah. I actually had to pause and write that line down.
And then Merlin comes with the baby.
Bastard!
Yeah.
Bastard! That's true. This movie made me really think about a great comic series from the 80s that DC put out. It was one of the first limited series, and if you like the story of the, you know, King Arthur and Excalibur and all this, you got to check out Camelot 3000. It's available as a graphic novel now. Fantastic. But it talks about all the characters reincarnated into the year 3000 and how they make the same choices and do the same things. It's a great, great read.
Oh,
and it made me get it back out.
Remind me again, it's Camelot 3000.
Camelot 3000.
All right.
Yeah, just go pick it up from your order from Amazon or whatever, and you won't be disappointed. It's really cool. And some of the weird things that happen as they get reincarnated in the future. One other quick note, and I promised him I'd mention this, is that my son Tristan got his name from Sir Tristan of the Round Table.
Oh, very nice.
Really?
He actually picked out that name long before he was born, and yes, long before Legends of the Fall.
Oh, good. Because there was a rush of Tristan names after that movie came out. And I always meant to ask you, but I didn't want to get in a fight.
No.
So.
it would have been fighting words. No, we were in a restaurant, and a lady at the table next to us said, "Oh, your son's name is Tristan?" And, yeah, ours is named that, too. You like the movie Legends of the Fall, right? And Tina almost decked her.
That's funny.
No. Like, calm down, honey. Calm down.
I always have to explain why I have a daughter named Carter, and everyone thinks that's a crazy name for a girl, and it kind of is, but they all think I named her after Jimmy Carter. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? Well, why would I name a girl after... anyway, she's actually named after a female character on an episode of The Outer Limits that we saw at 2 in the morning right before she was born. Anyway.
That's always... a bad time to make decisions.
I love what that says about how you guys were dragging your feet picking a name.
Yeah. Exactly. What do you want to call them? What do you want to call this one? I don't know. What did we watch tonight?
Chico. Let's call him Chico from Chico and the Man. Yep.
We watched Cujo. We should name him Cujo.
Cujo and the Man.
Potsy.
Yeah. Potsy. Brian, let's move over to Randy. Randy, your favorites, your things you liked, stuff you liked.
Nigel Terry, good job. Yes. Very, very enjoyable. I would say about as good as that performance could be. And thank goodness, because he had all the good lines. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry to say my silliest Lancelot line, going to something Brian Ibbett said, was where he and Arthur first meet. You know, they fight, and the fight comes to a bit of a still. And Lancelot says, "Your rage has unbalanced you. You would fight to the death against a knight who is not your enemy. Over a stretch of road, you could easily ride around." And I'm thinking, this is the point the little lightning bolt should like kind of go off on his shoulder. And you go, wait a minute. I'm guarding a stretch of road they could easily ride around. What kind of idiot am I?
Yeah. I know.
Like,
I didn't think about that.
There's just something about that. But I really enjoyed the...
sweet.
Go ahead.
No, it's so shiny. Like, have you never fallen down wearing this stuff?
Yeah,
he looked great. Yeah.
I just spent all day polishing it.
I did not like the score. I don't remember who said they liked the music.
Me,
but,
that was me. I liked it.
I'm sorry. Why not just get someone to score the whole film? You don't need to go grab O Fortuna and use it every time someone's on horseback.
No, that's true. Yeah. That's true. Way overused that. That's a really, really good point. I forgot about that. But the actual theme when it was being pulled out and you actually used, I thought was pretty good. But you're right. They way, way overused their open source, freaking royalty-free handle on that song. But anyway.
Which is funny because that's the song that's overused today. But if they would have just used it once back then, I think it would have been more powerful. I'm with you on that.
Yeah. It's like four times.
Yeah.
And then I always like to, with these older films, I always like to imagine what this has given us. And I would like to believe that this was part of what gave us a film that I highly overrate, and a lot of people don't like as much as me, A Knight's Tale, starring...
I love A Knight's Tale.
Heath Ledger.
Heath Ledger.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think A Knight's Tale owes a lot to films like this, mainly because films like this, they actually tried to joust. And I don't mean they just tried to portray jousting. They tried to joust in front of cameras, and that's very difficult to do, and it doesn't look very realistic, and it doesn't look very dangerous, and this kind of thing. I love that filmmakers later can come along after a film like this and say, all right, let's film it and make it look right.
Yeah, let's have it actually look like they're jousting and not just being stupid on horses.
Yeah, there's a lot of things like that between these two films, and again, nothing to do with one another really, but like there's a big scene with some mace fighting in Excalibur, where you're going, is that a rubber weapon he's swinging at that guy?
It didn't look very real. That was when he pulled it out for Lancelot.
Yeah.
Right, but
it is not right.
thanks, Brian.
I'm the one who said it.
Brian. I agree on all counts. I think we all pretty much agree on the strengths and stuff, other than the way they pulled off some of the music. I would like to tell the folks at home, if they walked away for even a minute during this movie, what they missed while watching Excalibur. Worst intro font ever used. That girl dance. Oh, yes. The girl dance was horribly uncomfortable to watch at the beginning.
Oh, terrible!
Really bad. Terrible. Really bad. It really got what's his name going, but I thought it was terrible.
Yeah.
Best fake horse riding ever. It seems all you need to do to get an enemy to get into an enemy castle is wear the armor of the Duke. That got him right in.
Yeah.
No problem.
Yeah.
The Duke. It's the Duke. Let the Duke in.
It's the Duke. How do you know? Look at the armor. It's got to be him.
Take the Duke. Creepy Morgrain Kid. Merlin looks like Pete Townsend. Author can't tell the difference between a branch and a snake. And when I say author, I meant Arthur. Merlin is a horse whisperer. You guys see that little scene?
Right?
I wrote that down, too.
He ran up and went, he ran off. That was great. Liam Neeson.
Horse was like, right on, dude.
Liam Neeson had samurai hair. That was pretty cool.
Yeah,
the Lady of the Lake is also the Lady of the River, apparently, because she was in a river.
She's in all water.
Is that the deal? Right. I mean, is there some real, that's like the lore behind it? Like she could pop up in the toilet if she had the right knife?
She is a watery tart.
Okay.
I have your sword. I was trying to take a poop.
Bad timing. It looked like that rabbit really got hurt when that dude tackled it. That seemed like a PETA problem. All movies in the 70s and 80s use that loud, weird voiceover. Did you need to see Lancelot naked in the forest? I say no. Merlin lives in a fortress of solitude. Speaking of fortress of solitude, did you notice that? It looked like a big crystalline freaking, like you could, I expect him to stick one of his crystals in something and have the Godfather come out and tell him what to do.
Yeah.
Helen Mirren gave birth to a toddler. I don't care what anyone says, that was not a newborn. That was like a kid that could walk. Hello.
And she pulled it out herself, which was,
kind of awesome.
Yeah. Well, yeah, if you were a woman and you were giving birth, wouldn't you start pulling yourself, if you could?
Get this thing out of me!
I can tell it has a bad laugh. Lucky boot spurs for the win in the end.
Yes.
Yeah, those boot spurs were lucky. Good thing, though. Yeah, very fortunate. And that's what you missed, folks, when you stepped away from this fine movie. Let's sum it up in a Twitter post. Randy!
Oh, I've got it right here. It goes...
Sorry, kind of...
There were no utensils in medieval times, hence the... I'm just kidding. Excalibur, remake of Mallory's classic, way, 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 way too long.
Okay, I agree. The long freaking movie. Brian Dunaway. You think I wasn't going to call on you?
Well, no. I was trying to get it up. My queen will now dance. Check it out. Look, but do not touch. He was very proud of that one.
Wow. That was haiku-ish. And also, then finally, a Twitter post from Mr. Brian Ibbett.
Even when you're dressed as a knight, kissing the tip of another man's sword, it's a little gay.
Yeah. That was a little weird.
Oh, Ibbett for the win. That was awesome. Very, very nice. Let's listen to Scott Fletcher say what he always says. I actually have two of these tonight. I couldn't resist the last one, but here's this one.
I am king, and this is Excalibur.
Love that. Then he gets,
and that's how it was delivered in the movie, too.
Yeah. Now, I think he improv'd this bit right here. I can't be certain. I'd have to go back and check, but I think so. Here it is.
Pull it out. Pull it out. Just give it a little tug there. Just pull it out.
Thank you, Scott Fletcher. You are truly the what would we call him of this show? He's not really the Ed McMahon. He's not really the Andy
Richter.
He's the what would he be? He's like he's more
the
like
Rod Roddy.
Rod Roddy.
That's even better. That or the dude on SNL that does all the announcer stuff.
Pardo.
Yeah, you're the Don Pardo of FilmSack, and we appreciate all you do. If you people want to be a part of the show, follow us on Twitter. Twitter.com/FilmSack is where to find us. You can also visit the site, FilmSack.com. The email to send us movie recommendations and other stuff is FilmSack@gmail.com. And that's going to about do it. It's been a Merry Christmas for all of us, I assume. I hope everyone had a wonderful holiday. I hope you enjoy Excalibur if you see it again. Do not have the kids in the room. I would recommend it. Probably not having them around.
At this point, we don't know exactly if we're going to have another episode out before New Year. So if that's the case, Happy New Year.
And if not, see you next week. Either way.
Yeah, we'll say it again.
So for me, for Randy, for Brian, and for all of you, thank you guys for being here. We'll see you next time on our next episode. And until then, take care. Say goodbye.
Bye.
I really loved it when Merlin finally got badass. I mean, because I got so sick of him being like I said, it was very Doctor Who-ish. He was just, he had the power to do anything, but he would just kind of lay around and goof off. And
he was more like if there was a real Merlin, he was like that guy, just full of
Full of crap, yeah.
Yeah, just sitting around going, blah, I can make things disappear. We'll go ahead and do it. I can't. I've got an important meeting. I'll see you guys later.
Exactly. I can't because it would take me 2 days to recover. Yeah. But I could totally do it if I wanted to.
He's a shyster is all he was. Yeah. I like the Disney Merlin. He's my favorite.
Yeah, the Disney one was the greatest.
Yeah, that Sword and Stone movie is kind of stained me because everything else doesn't hold up to it.